coming at you live from Austin, Texas. It's the Made for Podcast Movies podcast. All right, so here we go, guys. Welcome back. Well, I guess I should say that to myself since I feel like I haven't been here in a while. Unfortunately, I was not doing humanitarian work in Peru, but I was in Peru, so sorry I was gone, Dylan, but I appreciate the message and the episode you did with your mom last week, which
was... You should have just went with the humanitarian
rumor. I can't take credit for something I didn't do, my man, but...
That worked in your favor.
So, guys, we are back. We are here doing the Social Network podcast. It has been a long time coming. We kept just getting roadblocks in the way of doing this, but we're finally doing it, and I'm so fucking excited. I'm also really excited to introduce our buddy Mike. It is not Movie Mike's, but another amazing Mike friend of ours who is joining us because he sounded very interested in everything. So let's go. Introduce yourself, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me. Dylan just told me about this podcast, and I was like, hell yeah, dude.
One thing to note about Mike, too, is you actually went to film school.
Yeah, I have.
We did not.
That's a pretty big difference.
You act, you direct, you do all of it, right?
Yeah, not getting paid though, but
hey, we don't get paid here either.
Hell yeah, man.
It's a you told, about you told about that, right, Dylan?
Passion project.
All about that life.
You will not be getting paid for today's work.
This is literally a hobby. The definition of a hobby. But a good
you're,
one.
Like you're yeah. A you're contributing fun. To the arts. Dude.
That's right.
That's more important than any dollar bill.
That's absolutely
so
right,
guys, I'm actually taking the host duties for this week. I've learned a lot from Dylan over here, so he's still going to be working on the production aspects of it. He's behind the computers. He's got all that stuff going. I'm going to try to lead the flow, and we'll see how that goes, and maybe we can do it for future episodes as well. So let's dive right into it, The Social Network. So, unless you've been living under a rock for the past few years, you may have missed out on this stellar movie called The Social Network, expertly directed by the great David Fincher, with like an amazing screenplay from Aaron Sorkin, amazing actors Jesse Eisenberg, Justin Timberlake, who killed it as well, amazing soundtrack by Trent Reznor that we're going to get to later. But basically, this movie is about the founding of Facebook and those involved in it and kind of what happened as a result of all this happening, all the drama, all the betrayal, and so on. But I would be pressed to say that this was about Facebook. There's a lot more going on here, and we're going to get to that. But in the end, like, I think a big part of this is that this movie has set the stage and set the tone for what a biopic can be. Because obviously this is about Mark Zuckerberg, Edward Severn, Sean Parker, and so on. But I think you guys can agree it's maybe not the most fictional telling of this story, right?
Something really unique about this, though, is that it came from the perspective, it flashes from the creation and the inception of this Facebook idea, and then at the same time goes back and forth to a future event in which they're in the middle of a deposition where he's being sued. As we all know the story goes, he created Facebook, then these other people said he stole the idea from Facebook from them. They sued him for it, the Weekly Voss twits. It's a very well-publicized story. So the movie, it's interesting narratively as it switches back and forth through past and future. Two
it's really
different
framed by the court cases.
Yeah.
Definitely. And so really what you have is three different kind of stories at once from the three different people that are suing one another. And it's definitely
Yeah, and like we know different. The general idea. We know kind of the big picture story. But what really happened, I think it honestly doesn't even matter. And we're going to get to that in a little bit. And to kind of lead us off with that, screenwriter Aaron Sorkin, we got a little clip for you here that I think is going to kind of set us in the right direction in this conversation.
For me, this was never about Facebook. Mm-hmm. I'm not somebody who's as interested in technology as maybe other people. Mm-hmm. I knew what Facebook was, of course, but wasn't on it and mm-hmm. was never that interested in it. What I saw was against... a very modern backdrop, a story as old as storytelling itself, of mm-hmm. friendship, loyalty, power, betrayal, class, jealousy, all these things that Aeschylus would have written about, Shakespeare would have written about, a few decades ago, Paddy Chayefsky would have written about. And mm-hmm. again, I was just lucky. None of those guys were available, so I got to write about it. I suppose I could be glib and say you could make the same movie about the invention of a really good toaster, but mm-hmm. but that's not true. There was obviously the juice of the irony of this piece was mm-hmm. that it was Facebook is the greatest social networking device invented really mm-hmm. since the telephone, and that it was invented by people who had all these problems connecting socially mm-hmm. Was the stuff of good drama. There were two lawsuits brought against Facebook at roughly the same time. Mm-hmm. And the defendant, Mark Zuckerberg, the plaintiffs, there were two different suits, and the plaintiffs mm-hmm. Were Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss and Divya Narendra in one suit mm-hmm. and Eduardo Saverin in the other suit. Mm-hmm. The defendant, the plaintiffs, and the witnesses, they all went into the deposition rooms, they all swore an oath, and they ended up telling three very different versions of the story. Mm-hmm. I didn't pick one and decide on my own that that's the truth. I didn't pick one and decide on my own, gee, that's the sexiest, that's the mm-hmm. one that'll sort of make the best movie, and I'll write that. I liked that there were three different and oftentimes conflicting versions of the truth. Mm-hmm. I like courtroom dramas, and I like Rashomon, so I wanted to tell all three versions. What is the truth is that everything you see in the movie mm-hmm. is something somebody testified to, mm-hmm. and that the movie continually reminds you that you are listening to a series of unreliable narrators. The very first words out of Mark's mouth when we cut to the deposition room mm-hmm. for the first time are, "That's not what happened. She's lying." We're constantly hearing that mm-hmm. throughout.
So yeah, lots of stuff going on here, as Mr. Sorkin has kind of laid out. Before we get like too deep into it, I just kind of really wanted to cover like what we know is true. Like Facebook has been such a important thing in our society's life, culturally, metaphysically, just all this stuff. Like Facebook is in our conscious, right? So, but let's think about what really happened. Like we know Zuckerberg created Face Smash. We know like it was basically the early Tinder of its time. He like started working on the Facebook. He was with the Winklevoss twins and Divya Narendra making a Harvard connection. Traction picks up on Facebook, explodes. Sean Parker comes in. Eduardo's shares are diluted, and the rest is history. So we know all this, but as Aaron Sorkin said, there's all this meat in here that we're kind of not hearing about. There's three conflicting stories. So there's a lot going on in the sense of like, yeah, it is a biopic that this stuff kind of happened, but I remember when I brought this up to you, Dylan, you were like, I don't see it as a biopic. And no. I kind of want to hear your thoughts on that. And you too as well, Mike.
I actually, when I think biopics, I think of, to be honest with you, I think of like Ray. I think of Walk the Line. I think of, like these really straightforward Lincoln. Movies, yeah. Lincoln, that are pretty much more propped up on the acting, the portrayal of the character. I didn't think Lincoln was particularly that great a movie. Whatever. Not bad movie by any means. Whatever. That's irrelevant.
Shit about Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah, man.
Come on. No. Never, never, never. DDL, dude. That's not getting any shit from me. Yeah. No. But what more I'm saying is, though, this movie seemed to have so much more going for it other than just being the story of Facebook. It was so, yeah. You can literally change Facebook to, like a toaster, like he said in the quote. And it's like, it's still just as compelling, Of like this idea. So really what I saw was like kind of the character of Mark Zuckerberg representing, a character who is, and this is going to get kind of into the meat of the movie or the narrative, but a character who was, kind of a nerd. He was socially awkward. He didn't have the things that an Eduardo did.
Right.
And so and I think he was really fueled and he wanted to kind of get back or get big, get, successful in spite of the people that wronged him. He felt perceived to have wronged him. Like Rooney Mara's character,
Erica Albright.
Erica Albright, yeah. Who I guess is fictional, but she breaks up at the beginning. I feel like it's kind of like a getting back at the feeling inadequate in the face of being broken up with, and it kind of drives him to be this this punk, of like wanting to make a bunch of money to say fuck you to the world. Mm-hmm. And Sean Parker leeches on. A lot of things happen within him, but I saw more of him just taking the. Kind of like, what is it, the kit of, like, you get kits for a car, It's like the engine is nothing like a Corvette, but you buy the kit of the Corvette to put on top of it, and now you're driving a Corvette all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I see like Facebook as being kind of the kit that he put on top of this story, but really underneath it is like so much more. And I think it's best demonstrated by the quote by Rashida Jones's character at the end. When,
you're not trying to be an asshole, but you're not an asshole, but you're trying really hard.
We'll get to that in a sec. That's a great quote. But no, when she was talking about when he says they're all lying or something.
Oh, I got the quote for you.
Yeah, we can. I don't want to butcher it, but if you have it, we should read it.
Oh, I'm looking for it. I'm so sorry.
Pretty much the idea, though, is it's not really relevant. It's a story that's told throughout time, you know. And
certainly.
Like he said in the interview, you know.
Oh, absolutely. But that is a big part of contention when it comes to what he's saying about the biopic, because Mark Zuckerberg's point, at least from the aftermath of the movie, was that, look, I just wanted to make this thing. We're nerds. We tinker. I just tinker. And that's what and part of it is whether this story was over-dramatized to make some sort of dramatic sense about what's going on, as opposed to, you know, how do you make a movie about starting a business? It's kind of boring. You kind of need a little spice to make it work cinematically.
Well, but like,
do you have the quote, by the way?
I do have the quote. So the quote
read
is
that off real quick.
When there's emotional testimony, I assume 85% of it is exaggeration, and the other 15 perjury. Creation myths need a devil. And I think that's
so
like
that
the thesis of the
just
movie
to
right
end
there.
That though, and my yeah. point though is that's what I was going to edit on is like, I think really that sums up what I was just saying.
Well,
you know?
And I also think that was like Sorkin's like meta, like middle finger to the world of like, cause I'm sure he understood that when he made this movie, people would be like, there's this hole. That's not true. Right. And he's just like, I don't care. Like, that's not what I'm going for. I'm not trying to tell
Shakespearean, really.
Yeah, I'm not mm-hmm. trying to tell the 100% true story, because you can go read like the Rolling Stone article that came out around the same time, that which also like is an amazing article if you guys ever read it.
He really just got assigned the film. I mean, it wasn't even his baby to begin with. He had taken it from a book proposition, or how do they
the
call
accidental
it?
Billionaires.
Book proposal. Essentially, whatever they take to a publisher and to say, oh, well, I'm going to make a book out of this, but I want you to pay me before I do it.
And it was like 14 pages, and by the he got to the third page, and he already agreed to do it.
Because they knew immediately, like, oh,
well, they wanted to do a movie.
Interested.
They wanted to do a movie, concurrently make a movie.
Exactly. They wanted to option it for a screenplay.
Just
and, of course, Sorkin. I mean, shit.
Oh, yeah. That was his award that year. But, like, what I don't understand when people say that there was, like, no drama to this, or, like, had to add drama, I'm like, dude, the guy was in the middle of two lawsuits. Like, that's drama right there. Yeah. Like, sure, the details maybe made up, but, like.
I think it's on the surface, though. It's kind of boring when you think about it, but it's because of Fincher and Sorkin that it is the most interesting court case, you know, that you can imagine in that sort of sense. You know what I mean? Although you're not ever really reminded that you're watching something that's like a deposition or something. You know what I mean? It's very, very beyond.
That's Sorkin right there, man. He like that guy. I Steve Jobs, what I just saw recently by him.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was a pretty good movie. But I thought the best part is he writes dialogue. It's like you can have two nerds talking in a room and it comes off like a. Like in a, you know, a bank robbery or whatever. You know what I mean? Like
unrealistic,
it's that.
Sort of. Like,
No, but I'm just saying it's so it's thrilling, though.
Yeah,
I mean, like, he has a way of, like, that opening scene of Social Network, in my opinion, is the best part of the whole movie.
I agree.
And the way, and it's also guided by who films dialogue better than David Fincher, you know, in terms of that fast pace, like, you know, like back
and forth.
But
he's not a dialogue guy. I mean, he's known for being such a visual dude.
Not at all. But House of Cards, though, too, is another one like that he does.
You would think on the surface kind of boring.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. But the way he does makes a conversation so like electrifying, especially in Steve Jobs. I guess that Danny Boyle did a good job of maybe.
He did.
Intersplicing. And also that benefited from great editing, too. But the conversations in Steve Jobs, whatever. So the idea, though, is he is a very exciting way in which he writes. He can make these really, you know, banal conversations appeal, make like fireworks, so to speak. You know,
all of his movies I've ever seen, they sound like they should be on the stage, right? They sound like,
absolutely.
And it's obvious by his influences. Like, he grew up in the theater. Like, he grew up seeing plays with his family, and that's where he got his influence from. And I know a lot of people like
he even was an actor.
Like,
as well.
Yeah, and like people like hate on that, but I love it. Like, I think it adds to this element of like. Spicing up maybe a not so interesting story and making it into this drama and like compelling thing that we see with the Social Network. What and you, even if it's not true.
He's a great architect of story writing. He's somebody that really understands like the mechanisms and the formula that goes on. And, and that's unfair to say that because his stuff is not to say that his stuff is formulaic, but there's someone that could literally get any script. You could hand him in the same Charlie Kaufman way, which is adaptation of like, okay, you hand Charlie Kaufman a script about roses and can he make a movie about it? That's something that he's that kind of guy.
I feel like Sorkin's more dialogue based on this real world, as to where Kaufman's more like the flying through the cosmos. Kafka. There's no bounds to Kaufman. I feel, and you know, honestly, that was kind of my main critique. Now that we're kind of jumping into Sorkin right now, I feel like I can kind of
go for it, man.
I'm not the biggest Aaron Sorkin fan. You and I talked about this. We had a drunken conversation about this a little while ago. I don't know. I didn't grow up around. And I'm using the word nerd as if it's like a bad thing. But I mean, when I say nerd, I mean kind of like, geeky, like not so socially aware, active, I guess, or whatever. And not socially aware or,
socially engaged.
Maybe. But he writes those characters great. Like even or also very straight-laced politician, West Wing. He wrote 88 episodes of The West Wing. But I've just never really understood that. And so you asked me if I'd like Newsroom.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I got tuned out of that because it's not how normal people talk.
It isn't.
You know, it's how a select amount of people do. Yeah. When you have a television show where everyone is in his voice, and he even said in that interview, too, I don't know how to write outside of me. Because remember, he said he had a tough time writing 19-year-olds because it's like.
Yeah. And you could tell he had a journalism background. I mean, you could tell.
Right. There's a disconnect for me with theirs because people do not talk like that, man. And also, I was going to say, too, one thing that I will say, this might be controversial. I don't know. I want to get your opinion on this. This is not despite a couple attempts here and there, this movie's not funny. There's a lot of failed jokes.
There are funny.
No, totally disagree.
What was the funniest point of it?
If we're going to cherry pick, we're going to talk about this for hours.
Just say off the top of your head, if it was so funny to challenge you right here.
I mean, like the door when they go meet the president of the school. It
zip lines off of the
zip line. A bunch of the beer throwing.
I don't know. I just felt like it was.
It's not supposed to be a funny movie.
But
though, right?
I will say, look who you're dealing with—a bunch of nerds in the movie. You know what I mean? They're not exactly the funniest dudes. Sure. And even Sean Parker, he says such cringeworthy shit like "oh bong rip." Remember, just like random stupid stuff. It's just like.
By the way, is that not the most ridiculous? How often, really?
Again, that little white girl, she's gonna be out cold on the couch, dude.
But I love.
It's
this
like
movie.
He doesn't get how that shit works in real life. You know,
I am the biggest defender of this movie. I love it. I will never say a movie does not have its flaws. So that is my point.
Talk about. We're not. We're talking openly. I like this movie too. We're doing a whole fucking podcast about it. I'm not saying
bong hit.
Yeah, but I'm just. Say that was to my point that there's awkward dialogue in it. You know what I mean? I'm not critiquing the movie or anything. I'm just saying this is what I
was
saying.
Strategic,
no, you're critiquing Sorkin.
So
right
what
now.
I was going to say though, going a little bit further, is that I think I had a lot of problems initially with Sean Parker. The first time at that dinner, I want to punch the dude in the face. That guy is a fucking dweeb. You know what I mean? Like you can even see in the way, but then I realized that's the fucking character. Up until the very ending, when Eduardo Suave tries to take the swing at him, and you realize he shrieks in hair of this little. He's a tiny man. What does he say? This is why I love staying next to you because you make me feel so tough. And it's like, okay, now it makes sense. And not only that, props to Justin Timberlake. Like, that's an epic performance.
Sure.
Because even maybe that bong rent or whatever, maybe that was put into place to make show you how socially awkward this guy really is. Or maybe he was a nerd who's now cool. And he doesn't know how to talk to people,
I saw him much more sinister. I thought he was a much more diabolical
definitely sinister.
I thought he was very
sinister. I thought he had a plan the whole time. I didn't think he was going along for the
ride.
That's
no doubt. He definitely knew what he was doing.
It's not just a dweeb. This is somebody that has plans.
I'm just talking about from a character perspective, dialogue. So who would say that? Like you just said, you would never say that. But someone that was never cool, maybe what didn't grow up smoking pot, and now he's the shit. And it's just, it informs his character, little nuances that I like.
Fair, especially someone you could imagine that kind of nerd that never got that fame and then all of a sudden got the fame and then it was gone.
Right.
And you could, it's almost like the kid that did Star Wars way young, you know what I mean? And then like Anakin, both of them, you know what I mean?
The way that when he wakes up with that girl at Stanford, the way he's like, "Yep, I'm Sean Parker," he slept with Sean Parker. It's so sleazy, but that's the character. I mean, I think he's really relishing in that, and that's best exemplified too when he's all coked up at the party at the end. He's like, "We're gonna make the best, and I'm gonna be the biggest guy that's ever saw." You really see his real side of dude. He's so in his own head,
he's an opportunist.
He thinks he's like the next Steve Jobs or the next, And to a certain extent, man, I mean, he definitely has his...
Still owns 7% of Facebook.
And also, he shut down the music industry forever. I mean, he has some, like, real feats that he's accomplished.
But would Napster have happened regardless of him?
True.
I mean,
it would have.
But
yeah,
then same thing Facebook. I mean, you can look at Facebook and say, well, it could have happened. And it's become something beyond what could have
been. Well, it's
MySpace
a natural progression from Facebook,
yeah,
well, from MySpace, right?
With,
I mean, like...
Sure.
With that argument right there, like, they address it, too. It's like, it's all about getting there first, right? Mm-hmm. Especially relevant in this day and age with technology, with startups, with, like, changing the way we think as a culture and act and interact with each other. It's getting there first in the end. Like,
that is a great segue. Or, like, this is another thing I want to talk about is getting there first, that idea. One of the main points of this movie is that these guys, these two jock dudes, or three rather, who belong to this big prestigious fraternity, and they row crew, and they're used to, like, they're winners. They're fucking winners in an external, physical, material sense. You know what I mean? Like, they have medals. They're big. They're 6'5", 250, as he says. You know, like,
two of me.
they have a 3.9, you know, GPA at Harvard. They belong to the most prestigious social club. These guys are winners, right, so to speak. But they don't know how to write code. And when they come up with a good idea... Who's the guy that gets rid of that? Remember, he tells him, you didn't write the code. I don't fucking see. You don't know how to do any of this shit. Yeah, you had a bright idea, but guess what? This isn't a fucking crew race. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I like that idea of, like, and that's the most, like, when he spits the venom at them in that deposition.
Was it that line? If you were the inventors of Facebook, you would have invented Facebook.
Right. Yep. You don't know how to write code. You don't. So there's, guess what? You didn't win this one. And you know what I mean? Like, you win in life, but... The nerd wins in this moment.
It's a good question,
you know, like,
though. I mean, the intellectual property side of it, because of course it wasn't the first social networking site. It's funny how these kind of things happen, where it's not necessarily the first that wins ultimately. It's almost the most ruthless, or whoever figures it out which is a whole thing of power, which makes it, you know, kind of an epic movie in that way. Just
epic movie is a great way to say it. Like, sure, it's very low scale, like low key and like in a lower scale, but like. The dialogue when it's happening, it's rapid fire, and you just kind of get the sense of, like, holy shit, this is like some, like, I feel like I'm watching a duel, like, with the dialogue, you know what I mean? Like, that's like they're fighting back and forth.
The Winkle Vi. Also, I like, too, how there's an interesting quote where when they lose that crew race, he goes, I don't mind sitting out there on the water and losing a crew race by 1.3 seconds or ever to a better team. That's okay. But I do mind being swindled by some, like, half, you know, like, whatever. Yeah. So I like that distinction, though, of, like, you know, there's... kind of like the rules. They're used to the way that society's supposed to operate, where, like, hard work is rewarded and we're the winners and we're going to keep winning and winning. But Mark Zuckerberg, and also the turning of an era where it's like there are these new traits that these people are learning that they go to school for, and they're finally nerds. Or like these, like, and I keep saying, it might sound like I'm using nerds in a derogatory. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, though, like, these people that spend a lot of time on computers, they're being rewarded. Guess what? Now
playing field is being leveled.
I'm coming from a guy from San Francisco, River Palo Alto. Those are the rock stars now. I mean, those are the ones, the winners with all the money and all the. You watch that show Silicon Valley. The guys, the new dudes that are fucking flexing dick. They're the guys with the computer programmers. You know what I mean? The ones making all the good money. So that it's kind of that turning of the tide right there, though.
Sure.
And it's a turning of the tide in the sense that, like, we have this very, like, specific image of them in this movie, right? Like, say what you want about Mark Zuckerberg, but, like, in real life, I don't think he's this much of an asshole that he is in the movie, right? Or anything like that, or, like, Edward Saverin. I don't think maybe he wasn't that bitter or anything, but, like, I have some quotes here.
Brings it full circle, by the way.
Yeah, and I just kind of wanted to, like, put in their perspective, right? Like, I want to hear a little bit from them. And I thought these quotes were really interesting, and I'll try to go through them pretty fast. But one thing that really stuck out to me was Mark Zuckerberg in this quote, I just wish that nobody made a movie of me while I was still alive. Like, I think we can all relate to that a little bit. As much as I love this movie, that kind of fucking sucks.
It's the hardest part.
31.
Is it not?
This movie will endure, right?
Is it not, like, true, too, that he's had, like, the same, like, the girlfriend thing?
Yeah.
Now while on the topic of biopics, like, the girlfriend part was made up.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it's like
Sorkin argued that girl was real. They changed her name,
right? Yeah. But I've heard otherwise.
She was the other Asian girl that they met.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because she is Asian. Like, his wife is Asian.
Right, but he ended up marrying that girl, right?
Right, like, high school sweetheart.
I remember when it first came out. And they did a 60 Minutes on social network and Facebook. Yada. I remember, like, the biggest thing Mark Zuckerberg said that was just like. Like, that's bullshit. Like, I've been dating the same girl for, like, 15 years. Like, he's like, I didn't make Facebook because of a girl.
Yeah.
You know, and so that kind of fits into our conversation pretty well.
Well, and also in the creation of Facebook, this one is from Dustin Moskovitz, who is one of the coders that we kind of, like, saw briefly in the movie and whatnot. A lot of exciting things happened in 2004, but mostly we just worked a lot and stressed out about things. The version in the trailer, he hadn't seen the movie yet, seems a lot more exciting, so I'm just going to choose to remember that we drank ourselves silly and had a lot of sex with co-eds. The plot of the book slash script unabashedly attacked Mark, but I actually felt like a lot of his positive qualities came out truthfully in the trailer, soundtrack aside. At the end of the day, they cannot help but portray him as the driven, forward-thinking genius that he is, which I agree with him. Like, I totally am on board with that. Like, I don't think that Mark Zuckerberg is an asshole in real life. I've seen him talk.
Well, we don't know.
To be also, though, to be fair, yeah, my brother-in-law, who worked in programming and stuff like that for a long time, met Mark Zuckerberg and was like, pretentious asshole. Is what he told me. So, like, who really knows, right? Maybe the public Mark Zuckerberg is this nice guy, and what we see in the movie may be kind of real.
It's a big question.
Who
youngest
knows?
Billionaire in the world. Come on, who's not going to be an asshole?
Yeah.
But
true.
Then at the same time, we have Eduardo Saverin, who comes out and says, the movie was clearly intended to be entertainment and not a fact-based documentary.
Right. And this is a guy who also, he looked pretty good in that movie, Eduardo Saverin, in terms of, like, he has nothing to really hide. So if he's saying that, then... I mean, I would trust his
judgment.
Well,
that goes
back
to what Sorkin said about, like, there's three different stories.
Right.
Who's going to be the one that tells the whole truth? No, they're going to be like, no, this is my side. Sure. This is my side, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right. So I guess wrapping that up there, one more final Sorkin quote that I think kind of caps this up. I don't want my fidelity to be the truth. I want it to be storytelling. What is the big deal about accuracy purely for accuracy's sake? Accuracy's sake. And can we not have the true be the enemy of the good? So as we can see, I guess the biopic is something very loose. And I think this movie has kind of set a new tone and precedent for what the biopic could be. Anyway, that's my interpretation of it. And if we want to talk about it later, we absolutely can. But I think what kind of endures in this is like the themes and such. And if there's one thing I really picked up on, and I hope you guys did as well, is that Mark is kind of like an outcast. He's kind of a loner. He's kind of like, as Dylan has been saying a few times, a nerd. Maybe like the prototypical nerd in a lot of ways. But what really like kind of compelled me to like think about loneliness in the modern age is more like the tagline that came out when this movie came out. You don't get to 500 million friends without making a few enemies. And that there, I think, is a huge talking point for this movie. Because as Sorkin has said, like, you have all these antisocial kids, antisocial, socially awkward, whatever you want to say, making the biggest social phenomenon that this world has like ever seen. And I think that's a pretty interesting thing to like pick apart at. I don't know. What do you guys think?
It's ironic.
Yeah, definitely. Ironic? Well, that was like a three-pronged question there.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I see the you don't get to 500 million friends without making videos. I see that more as just being kind of representing, well, like I said, I'll take that part of the question and run with it. And I noticed a big difference between the three of the primary characters. We talked about this beforehand, but you got Mark Zuckerberg, you got Eduardo Saverin, and then you got Sean Parker, who comes later on. And I think one thing, there was a distinction I noticed straight off the bat between Eduardo Saverin and Mark Zuckerberg. Eduardo was an economics major, as to where Mark was a computer science major,
yeah.
Correct? And so there's already, look at those two different majors straight off the bat, how they're different, you know? One deals with the computers and, you know, their technology and how that's kind of growing. It's kind of endless, you know? So where economics is very stationary, it's, you know, it's numbers. It's defined. It, you know, it's something that's tangible in the sense that it's been around for a long time and its strategies and, you know, what's good economics, what's bad economics. And it's funny, these two guys decide to partner up, and throughout the movie you see this contrast in the way they look at business. For instance, you know, like one, and I use the word conservative when describing him. I thought Eduardo was a very conservative guy, and he played it very straight-laced.
Right.
Think about it, too, who we're talking about here. He's a guy who made a bunch of money betting oil futures, like a lot. He's, like, rich. good looking dude. He, you know, makes that fucking super prestigious social club that Mark didn't get in, and then contrast him with Mark, awkward guy, didn't make a bunch of money making oil futures, doesn't get any of those clubs, awkward with women, blows his one shot with this one girl, you know, whatever. So right off the bat, there's two different characters like that, and then going through, I think, because of this, Eduardo Saverin doesn't have this sense of urgency, you know? He more wants to just get in there and make money, smart business decisions. He's a conservative guy like that. So you see, as the company starts to grow, he doesn't have this to make $500 million. You need to make a couple of interviews. He's like, no, we can just play this really simple. Let's just let up a couple good interviews. He lines up interviews. Let's play this straightforward. Let's sell advertisements. He's an economics major. He knows what he's doing. He knows good business. Mark wasn't inspired by that. I mean, Mark wasn't driven by that kind of things. I think that quote applies more to Mark because Mark had something to prove. When that, like, from the get-go of the movie, the opening scene, that girl breaks his heart or whatever.
And he was trying to get revenge, right.
Very clear that that's exactly what he's trying to do, man. And I think when Sean Parker comes into the mix, he latches on to that because Sean Parker very much shares that same fuck you to the world mentality. Because you think about when, you know, looking at their origin stories or what little we do get of them that I described earlier, is like Mark does. He never got those things. And remember, there's a great line where Eduardo, when he gets written off or his shares get diluted, he goes, is this because I got into the Phoenix Club? Remember that? He tells him. He's like, is that it? Like, are you jealous of people like me who are successful in certain things? Like, is that what this is about? It's kind of what he was saying. It's like, you know, like you and Sean, you're sitting here, you fucking got like you fuck the world type mentality. Like, really, you're going to drop out your best friends, your best friend, your only friend at that point. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Because make money.
To that point, they bring up an interesting point in the one of the depositions where they talk about how I'm losing my point here.
Good man. Deposition.
Deposition. Is that what you're talking about when they're like,
which one?
When the girl brings up like that was your only friend or like your best friend, you wrote out your best friend.
God damn it! I lost my point. I apologize.
Well, bring it up, and get it back. But anyways, I just think that more referred to, I think, Mark's is his grudge against the world. You know that quote. Well, you know, like.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, let's take a step back and, like, just think about the character of Mark in general, like, excluding Mark Zuckerberg as a human being and, like, in our collective consciousness of what we know him to be, like, just in the context of the movie, like, you can tell so much about him just, like, from the very beginning, right? Like, we were talking about this off recording about how we love that scene. Also, I think we talked about it here, too, about them in the bar and just, like, how the two of them
best
going back and forth, trading barbs in, like, this dialogue. And it gives you so much of an idea of what kind of character we're dealing with. Like, it's all about the clubs. It's all about academics. He's doing everything he can to insult this girl without even meaning to. And, like, but trying to impress her at the same time. I think it, like, already sets him apart of how he's alone in a room full of people.
He's that typical guy who just shits on things, even though you know it's becoming from a place of insecurity.
Yeah.
It's like like, 19-year-old character. You know, I'm just like... God, I hate that band, or I hate like stuff like this, or like
very much an anti-hero.
Yeah, like
ooh,
jocks,
yeah,
you know,
like
oh, he's definitely an anti-hero. Well, what's Sorkin says too, like 95% of the movie, he's an anti-hero until the last 5%, last 5 minutes,
tragedy
becomes a tragic hero. Yeah,
yep.
Well, I mean, I just think that it's one of those things. We all have friends like that. We all ourselves have been in that mode, you know, that seeing the world through that paradigm of like.
Well, the thing, like, with all this, like, this drive he has and, like, how he treats people, you can't, like, knock him for being ambitious, you know? Like, the dude has a purpose. He wants to make a name for himself. And whether that's just, like, trying to get revenge on this girl or get other girls or, as he says in that one board hearing when he hacks the school, he's like, I believe I deserve some recognition. It's like, what, do you? Like, like does everyone? Or, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, I remembered my point that I wanted to bring up. Okay, yes. The fact that what was Zuckerberg's, I guess, intention in having Eduardo Saverin involved in the first place? Because they bring up the fact that the Winklevoss twins were rich. And if you would have said, hey, I have this idea for Facebook, would you give me some money? They would have been totally on board to give him all that he needed. Eduardo Saverin hadn't made a real fortune, $300,000 in a summer, but... he was only investing, what, $19,000? And then, of course, Justin Timberlake makes the big thing of, oh, here's your $19,000.
Let me do the math on that.
Yeah, right? When, of course, you had the Winklevoss twins that were trying to make the same thing.
Yeah.
On a smaller scale.
On a smaller scale, and it was definitely more conceited,
but
right? It was definitely more like...
Why did he go with him? when he was intending to really leave him in the dust to begin with?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm trying to think.
I don't think anything of this was premeditated though either, right? I think Sean Parker had a lot to do with it.
Right.
Because also, I think really what, I don't think he ever planned on leaving the dust. I think it's those two.
Sean Parker, that is a good point.
But I think what really separated them apart is those two different ways they came from. He was had this sense of urgency of telling everyone to go fuck themselves. He wanted to tell the world to go fuck you. Eduardo didn't have that. Like, again, Eduardo was a conservative guy. He didn't have this
voice
grudge.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what I said before is like, I think it's that those two different places they came from that naturally split them apart. You know, and it's like I think even Mark Zuckerberg says at one point, listen, you got to just get on board with this, or I don't know what else to say.
You're going to be left behind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just being like, listen, dude, this is the speed that me and Sean Parker are running on. And if you can't bring up with this, like, if you can't get, you're going to be left behind. You know what I mean? Like, no doubt. And again, yeah, I think it just comes down to Eduardo. He's not on that level like that. He doesn't have a grudge.
And almost stopped it. They make a big point of him freezing the bank account and almost stopping it in the sense that if Facebook were to go down, the credibility of the site from that infancy could have been done.
He had to get his attention. Yeah,
it would have been unreliable, and everyone would have stopped. And that became the ultimate reason, almost cinematically, or I guess narratively, that he dumped him. It was like, oh, you know. You turned your back on us.
He was trying to end the party at 11.
Yeah.
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 But I'm saying, like, that's
a nice little one.
Well, it's like, dude, like, Sean Parker and Jesse Eisenberg were trying to party all night. He's the one trying to end the party at 11. You know what I mean? Of like that, I think that was the main. I think naturally, they kind of split. But you can tell there's pain in Jesse Eisenberg, great performance.
Yeah.
There's pain in his eyes though when he sees across the table of like he turns to him and he goes, "I was your only friend."
He's talking to him from his back. I mean, half the time Eduardo's like facing the window as he's giving his deposition, and Mark's just looking at the back of his chair as they're talking. I mean, which is almost childish in a way. Could you imagine having a conversation or like a legal conversation where the other dude is like around? I'm sorry, I'm probably getting too loud.
No,
but where the other person is talking to you from looking at the wall or just no? Yes, he touched me.
Especially with what's on the line, hundreds of millions of dollars or an undisclosed settlement is what we know with Eduardo anyway. But
but what he does turn to him and be like, "I was your only friend." There's tears in his eyes and stuff. It's really,
it's a hard moment.
And it's great. It's excellent. Yeah.
But then, so like in a lot of ways, like Mark is alone, but we keep talking about him and Sean, right? Like him and Sean are together, blah, blah, blah. So like, I think what also kind of solidifies the sense of loneliness is that like, if you think about it, like Sean, the asshole he is, the paranoid, like schizophrenic almost at times he is, but like he seems pretty lonely too. Like he seems like he's one of those guys, like the Silicon Valley guys, like you were saying, that came out of the woodwork and are just like, "Hey, I have a great idea," and the world just like shits on them or like hates what they're doing. And then the rebels, you know, they like, what does he say? Anyone about to bring up the club scene, which like, love the club scene. I think it's one of the most like Fincher things I've ever seen in my life. But what is he's like? Yeah, he talks about Napster. He's like, yeah, and it pissed a lot of people off, but like, how awesome is that? And every time I watch that, I'm like, yeah, brother. Like, I totally agree with that. Like, I would love to make that mark on the world.
But you see, I don't know. I would almost disagree. Like, I'd rather make a company that like helped a lot of people and I made some money off it. See, I almost feel like I'm more Eduardo in a sense of like, yeah, like that's cool, but like, I would have rather like started like a production company and made some money. And like, you know, had a lot of friends,
right,
and like, you know, but
safe.
Like, but so I think there's something though to say. I think what they share in common is their pursuit to say fuck you to the world and do these piss people off is very selfish though. Eduardo never had first off, like Eduardo ends up dating the first groupie they get. You know what I mean? Like the guy's very like
pragmatic.
Comfort. Yeah. Well, he's like, and he wants to help out, Mark. He wants to build like a company together to build this thing. And Sean Parker's not interested in any of that. He uses Mark 100%. He doesn't give a fuck about Mark, this random guy. But it's like he latches onto him, sucks all the power out of it, and then gets the fuck out of there. Yeah, well, if you know the story, like he doesn't like really. He took advantage of a lonely guy for the same way of him saying he wanted to say fuck you just as much as Jesse or Mark. So I just think it was more out of selfishness. I think really is both them. And then at the end, I don't think Mark Zuckerberg, he gets redeemed a little bit because I think he's left in the dark a little bit of like, I'm not this selfish dude. I like Eduardo. I like these people. Meanwhile, Sean Parker's railing lines and being like, "I'm going to be the best man in the world." You know, like, I think it's really, I think the movie vindicates Mark Zuckerberg a bit at the end of like, he realizes the mistake he made, you know, not motherfuckers sitting on billions of dollars.
Like, I think with them like being in the club scene room, like that, the point I'm trying to make, I guess, is just that the two, like, regardless of their intentions, regardless of what happens in the end, they can relate, right? Like, they're the two that get along the best.
That's what splits them off from Eduardo initially.
Yeah, exactly. And sure, like, but at the same time, it's like, you say conservative, I say, like, Eduardo represents the old, they represent the new. Like, think of our generation. Think of these people now. Like, we're pretty fucking selfish people. Like, well, like across the board.
The idea is that there's more, we have technology that can make, that changes the whole business. It's disrupting. With Napster is a perfect example.
The playing field is leveled in a way that it's never been before.
Yeah. But also it's flipped, where it's like, we have all these different, we'll talk about that in a little bit farther down the line, but it's like, our reality is different. Business is different. It's a new game. It's not about the tangible economics, preconceived stuff. It's about the endless ideas that can be executed. And these guys are the dreamers. And where Eduardo, I think, was more the business side of it. You know, like, he was more grounded in that. But I would just to say, while we're talking about the club scene, I just saw that as just this overblast of materialism and, like, fakeness. And the fact they can't even barely, it's just loud, shitty music. You can't even, they're yelling over the music and there's supermodels next to him. Let's get shots. You know, it's like, there's
how
weird,
realistic,
like,
is that?
Glowing,
like,
shots, like shitty alcohol, you know, like just gross. And like, take this back. I want a bottle of the so-and-so. It's
all
like
meant to mesmerize Mark.
Absolutely. It's all, and it's just, it's dangling the carrot in front of his face. Yeah. Like, you can have all of this in your dreams. And I think that scene was really done because the music was best.
How did you feel about the Victoria's Secret reference? I don't know how much I quite got it. I guess it does kind of relate to the Eduardo Sovereign thing of this guy who has this idea for Victoria's Secret and sells the company when it's modestly successful, around $5 million, only to find out a few years later it's valued for $500 million and then jumps off of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right.
And what is that? I've heard the quote, it's so fascinating that they brought the story, that they mentioned that. I never quite got it, I guess, in some sort of
I think it's just
sense.
Categorizing what we're talking about right now, and that's Eduardo Sovereign, you know?
I guess in a way,
I think he's saying, like, leave really what he was trying to say without saying it is, fuck you, Eduardo. Like, that's the guy to guy that settles for $4 million. You and I, we're big idea guys. We're the guys that, you know what's cool? A billion. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That, you know, billions of dollars. Think about that. Like, that's the fact that Mark Zuckerberg, a guy like that, can make $1 billion in such short amount of time. A young dude, the youngest billionaire in the world.
Like, top 10 largest company in the world.
But that's because of, like, the time we're living in, though. I mean, that wasn't a reality, I don't think, from what I can understand. Like, and Eduardo Sovereign, the character he represents, you know, like, where that would have worked, his strategy would have worked back in the day.
That would have worked.
Yeah, totally.
But I mean, like, he's like, obviously, and they make a point to demonstrate his good knowledge of economics. Remember the lawyers where he, like, finishes their sentence?
Or even the beginning of the weather bit. I mean, the fact that he made his money off of predicting heating prices based on weather.
He's a smart dude, no doubt. The movie goes out of its way to show you that. Yeah. But the thing is, it ain't his time anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're in a different era where it's like
very fair.
The computer guys with technology that's, you know.
And that can make someone like him feel very lonely as well. You know what I mean? Like, because he was definitely an outcast in that sense as well.
Yeah,
like, because in the beginning, he kind of fit the norm. He fit the mold of, like, this is how things are done. Like, we need to go to ad exec meetings and get advertising revenue. And then by the end, he's the lone man out. And you have all these interns and, like, this big office and everything. And that's what's becoming the norm.
Right. But yeah, I can't help but just see Mark Zuckerberg as being a very selfish person. And spiteful, or feel like he got wronged, you know? Mm. Like, it's the guy sitting in the corner of the room with the, you know, watching everyone else have fun. He's not invited. Or, like, the guy sitting in the corner of the party being like, I want what he has, you know? I want what they have. And I'm going to show these. It's every supervillain, right? Ever, you know, how he gets started of, like,
it's a great question, though. You know, whether it is him needing to do it for some sort of selfish reason. It's that whole back to our other topic, whether it's a narrative that requires him to or in the story having to make it dramatic is what makes him need it, whether it's that or him just being an engineer and wanting to make something cool. And if that's, you know, not fictional,
who knows, like, what his intentions were
in real life, like, who knows. But I'm just saying, in this movie, I can't help, I didn't see anything that was.
But, like, I guess my point being in the sense of power, in that in the same Steve Jobs way, like, do we ultimately have to be assholes to get to that position?
Right.
Is it inevitable that you are going to have to be a dick to some people, that some people are going to have to be stepped on for you to get to that place? I think that makes it, you know, timeless in the same, you know, way that the loneliness bit does. But it's that question of power. Like, do you have to be a shitty person to get to that point?
Yeah, no, totally. I agree. And honestly, that's a conversation for another time. It brings up a lot of different things, especially with, like, you know, that's commonly raised with capitalism and stuff like that.
Sure.
Isn't it almost inherently, you know, dog
Steve Jobs,
eat dog?
Great example of, like, do you need to be this ruthless human being to ever achieve? Is it possible to be? Yeah, definitely. No.
And just kind of like wrapping up loneliness. I actually reached out to my buddy Daniel, who's a big fan of this movie, particularly the soundtrack. And he and I kind of talked about it for a hot minute about this because he knew we were doing this podcast. And he wanted to write in about the soundtrack. And he didn't really exactly touch upon what we're saying, but I think it's a good kind of appreciation for it, in the sense that when I see this, and I think you guys can agree, I think the soundtrack in its own way is its own character in this movie. I think it kind of adds so much to the feeling of, like, dread and, like, betrayal and loneliness, especially that intro track with Mark Zuckerberg just, like, walking to his dorm. Like, I think it's insane. But I just want to hear from Daniel, and this one's for you, man. And here we're going to read it for you.
A fan of Hans Zimmer, it was difficult for me to accept the defeat of the Inception score to Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's work for The Social Network. But now, as I've listened to it more, I like their score for exactly the same reasons I thought Inception should have won. The defining track, Hand Covers Bruise, is no epic, emotionally charged, multi-layered masterpiece. And the absence of what made Hans Zimmer's Inception score iconic and in many ways parodied, the bold, laid over heart-wrenching or heart-pounding orchestral complexity is what makes The Social Network great. It's simple, distorted, and unsettling, and beautiful, and parallels The Social Network in a way that the Inception score, in all its complexity and overbearing themes, never could. It's a Picasso. Hashtag Life of Pablo. Hashtag thanks for you. That's for you, Phil.
Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah, right on. That's awesome. It's also worth noting, too, that this movie did not win Best Picture, won Best Score.
Best Screenplay, but not Best Picture and Director because of the fucking King's Speech.
Right. And also, if you like this score, you should check out Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor's actual band. Insane.
Have you heard of Nine Inch Nails?
Dude, fuck with Nine Inch Nails.
Before we kind of, like, conclude this podcast, and, you know, it's the worst part about it when we get near the end, but we're going to have some fun until then. Off podcast, we were kind of talking about our relationship with Facebook, and we found out that we all three have very different takes on it. And I'll just go ahead and put mine out there. I've had a Facebook for probably over 10 years, and I'm still pretty fucking active, if I'm being honest. Like, I check it every morning I wake up. I message people on it. I have friends from abroad. That's my main line of communication with them. So, like, Facebook is integral in my life. I'm not going to lie. I'm not ashamed of that at all. Who else wants to chime in on this?
I'll guess I'll go for the median range. I don't post a lot. Anything that I post would be, like, photos of places that I was at one time, but it would never be, like, a very regular thing. But the point about talking to people far away, that's maybe the coolest thing to me personally, because I have cousins that live in random places, and it's – no other, especially
email.
Email is there, but it's Messenger, Skype is there as well. It's the same kind of thing. I mean, it just serves as a nice way of communicating with people all over the place, for sure. In that kind of, or at least people that care about.
But you say you're a medium user.
Even less than that. I rarely ever post. Facebook to me is neat for finding new articles, almost in a milder way to Reddit. Personally,
okay, yeah.
Like I think I find a lot of stuff on Facebook, just silly videos or interesting stuff too, in a milder sense. Yeah, like.
And that's through your friends.
Yeah. Well, not even so much friends, but more other publications that have Facebook pages. They're yeah, I fucking love Science, or I mean IFC's page, or
right,
Vice's page, or like
things.
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of other publications that, you know, keep up in that.
Yeah, I feel like it's become something different in that way. I don't have a Facebook, and I mean anyone who knows me knows that about me.
But you use other social media.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, I use Reddit. I use Reddit.
Yeah. Twitter.
I don't
do you comment
Twitter.
On Reddit? See, I would be terrified.
Yeah, I comment on Reddit all the time.
Oh,
dude.
I'm a lurker. So.
Oh my god, I get into it, dude. I was getting like, there's some Ted Cruz people that I was arguing with for like days at a time. Like, I'll get into
Ted
it.
Ted Cruz
people
on Reddit?
Only on this politics subreddit. Yeah, I know, right? They're out there. The thing is, they disguise themselves.
Where?
They go on the Bernie things and they just talk shit.
They have Bernie names.
Yeah,
bro, Bernie. Just for you know.
But I mean, I think I initially. I went in high school. I had like a girlfriend at the time who made one for me and shit, so we could talk. Yeah, but other than that, that lasted a couple months. And I deleted that shit. I haven't had it since.
Oh, it's still there. You can't delete it.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, I know. You're right. It is. Like, if I were to sign back
yeah,
in, it would.
It'd be,
back,
yeah,
it'd
be saved.
There.
Right.
But I never. I mean, I get it. I'll start out by saying, like, I get it. I understand it. And honestly, I really do think it's one of the most important things. In terms of like culturally, I recognize the cultural phenomenon. I understand the significance of keeping in touch with family, of, you know, watching people grow up on there. I get that. I just never really have been interested in that aspect of other people's lives. I really don't. I've never really been into it, and I don't really care what other people. I've never, you know, I think maybe deep down there is some part of me that does care, but I just don't want to embrace that part of myself. Of like, I feel like I don't do any disservice to know. It's bad enough having to have small talk with some people about like some stupid shit, you know?
You want
to
know what they ate that day?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's too easy for people to abuse that. And I have a very, you know, tight group of friends. I only hang out with a select amount of people too. I've never felt the need to have a lot of different friends. And I'm by no means like an introvert or anything. I just don't see the need in having to know everyone else's business all the time. And also 90% of it, I don't give a flying fuck.
Sure.
Really,
sure.
I don't care. And yeah. I'm not going to sit down and actually, like, I have limited, I take the amount of space that's in my brain very serious. And I have a limited amount in there. I'm not going to fill it up with someone else's bullshit. That doesn't need to happen, man. I'm not going to fall victim to that. But I talked to you guys about this beforehand. Something even, like, more, too, is I've just always saw, like, this idea of, like, the draw of Facebook is, and I mean, I'm kind of taking shots here, but not really. But I'm in this unique perspective where I actually can take shots of Facebook and get away with it. So I'm going to indulge in that. But I see it kind of as like, you know, appealing to a lesser version of yourself. Of like, there's this famous philosopher named Heidegger. He was an existentialist philosopher. He had this idea of, he split two things up. You're either for yourself, the being, which is yourself, which he called Dasein, and then there's this other thing called Das Man, which is being for they. So there's two distinctions. In moments, you are either being for yourself or you're being for they meaning the collective, the other people's society. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is, he said, you want to strive at all times to be for yourself, to be for me, Dasein, being, and not fall victim to they. Keep in mind, though, it's really tough. You're not always going to be for yourself. No matter, even the most disciplined dude is never going to be living for himself at all times.
Sure, and that seems kind of selfish in its own way.
Well, also, to put it this way, when you're born into living for other people. For instance, when you're straight out of the womb, you depend on another human being to you know what I mean, like to raise you.
But you're also the most egocentric creature at that point,
totally.
Too. You're totally me.
But you're still depending on other people at that point. Like you can't live, you know, so. But at a certain point, though, you're expected to break off from that and create and focus on being and yourself. And there's a lot of different activities that take place in both those stances. But one of them, the big one that he carved out, one of the three big ones he carved out was the difference between curiosity and wonder. And so curiosity, he always associated with, I think one of the ways I've heard it described to me is always seeing what's behind the veil, like over the hill. I'm just wanting to know what's over that hill. I'm going to walk over the hill and see what's over the hill. And then there's another hill, and I go, I want to see what's over that hill. And it's this kind of just wanting to know what you can't know or what's not immediately available. And the idea is, though, it's kind of mindless. There's nothing really attached to it. It's more for the sake of knowing. You know what I'm saying? Of like, dude, do you want to know what this capital of Washington State is? Okay, it's Olympia. Cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's more for the sake of just wanting, I want to know that. And it's kind of best represented nowadays where you have pop-ups. You have ads on the side. Top 10 ways to lose weight. Oh, let's click that. Oh, let's see what Julie's doing. Oh, click that. Oh, let's see what Mike's doing. Oh, look at the trip to Costa Rica. Cool. Phil's trip to Peru. I would actually check out your trip to Peru. That'd be kind of cool. But the idea is like shit that you don't really care. It's embracing this curiosity. What is it? It's just curiosity. It's all it is. It's mindless. Now, the opposite of that would be wonder. And now the idea of wonder, to bring it back to being and they, wonder is tied to, comes from a place of being, which is Dasein, you know, being. So it's the idea is that wonder comes from understanding more about ourselves as beings, you know. So it's not tied up into the they. It's more about informing yourself about being. I wonder, and the big difference between wonder and curiosity is wonder doesn't necessarily have answers. Curiosity always has answers. So when you click that link, you're getting the answer. When it says, blah, yada, 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 you click it to get the answer because you feel like you deserve the answer to that. You know what I mean? And I don't never saw life like that because I know that there aren't answers to that. There are not means to end to anything. And so this kind of like mental masturbation, this like clicking and clicking. But well, I'm just, and so I just think that to just make the distinction, I hope I made it clear there, but it's just like I've never been indulged in that mindless behavior. I always feel very dirty or very like I've wasted my time, I guess. Does that make sense? When I click on those and I get stuck in it, because I think we're all susceptible to it. Take out an ape and put him on Facebook. He's going to find, oh, that girl, she's hot. I'm going to click on that. Oh, bathing suit photos? You know what I mean? Like, blah, blah.
I wonder if, to me, the draw of Facebook would be more to broadcast yourself than to look in other people. I think a big question about Facebook on and the, I guess, sincerity of people is that you can't be in the same way that you can't write a sincere autobiography, or there is like you are projecting your own best self in the sense that this isn't quite authentic you. You are saying, this is me all the time. I'm having such a great time. My life is so great. You're editing out all the real shitty parts of your life and creating this fake image of how great you are in theory.
Right. Well, and so, and also, what's the intention behind that, you know?
To broadcast yourself in a way rather than, see, I guess my that would be my point.
Why are you broadcasting yourself?
Why not?
To make yourself.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why but not?
No. The question is why? Like why?
Why? Like, because
why
I get,
not? Because
I get,
it's senseless.
I get joy out of it. Like, on my Facebook, like, I make jokes. Like, I post cool pictures. Like, and it's not like I'm showing in the most intimate details of my life, but I like connecting with these people that I don't normally get to connect with.
But why
share this social interaction.
But we're doing
together.
That right now. Why the medium of Facebook, pretty much, is what I'm saying.
Puts it on a broader scale. It puts it on a world scale.
It's
in a way that
with
it
the
is
world.
Out there.
Yeah.
It is out there in the sense you are publishing. In a silly way, it makes everyone their own journalist. You know,
right.
makes their own makes, their own commentator, their own.
That's fair. Yeah,
even including columnist. The shitty people on the internet,
that
it gives
have,
everyone a platform.
Yeah.
And whether you think that's good or bad is irrelevant because it puts everyone on an
I
equal playing field.
I didn't say it's good
field.
Or bad.
No, I'm not saying you. Just in general, like it puts everyone on an equal playing field. And if we're a society, if we're a culture, if we're a people that strive for equality in any shape or form, then social media, internet should be available for everyone. And this should be a means of like expressing yourself.
And so would you say that that's something kind of natural in ourselves to
yes,
do that? Okay.
Absolutely.
So now at a very young age, though, I've always found that it's going to sound so pretentious. Warning, pretentious warning. I feel like I agree with what you said, but I've never felt the need that Facebook was the medium in which to do it. I thought more podcasts or art. For a broader term,
right.
was the way I would do
it's
that.
It's a lazier way.
I think that what you guys are describing is something is a need to express yourself, right? That I think is inherent in a lot of us, but I've always felt the need to, it's too easy to fucking post a picture of you Photoshopped on a thing and then, or if, you know, post a video, a funny Tim and Eric video, you get retweet, and you get a lot of laughs or whatever. It's like, that's lazy. And I'm not saying it's bad. Again, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I've always felt the need, like, because I've done that. I'm from a young age, since I was fucking 18. And I learned how to do all this shit. I've had a podcast with my friends. I'd be making people laugh. I would post.
Yeah.
I would make mixtapes. I would post for people and friends. I'd
yeah,
make
and
little
why?
Short videos.
Why?
Because the same need of wanting to express yourself and put it out there. But I just think there's a distinction needs to be made about having a Facebook where you're, you know, liking things or you're, I agree. I think they're all in the same realm. I just think on a spectrum, I preferred more and more, you know, maybe truthful, honest way of expressing myself, which was maybe through art rather than Facebook. Just
Right, no, and that's fair. And like kind of bringing it back directly to the movie, because I think we're getting very philosophical here and I love it. But just kind of like relating back to the movie in that sense of like a lot of like articles and kind of things I've seen on the internet about The Social Network. And it's interesting that people bring this up. And even when the reviews came out, is about where does this place, like where does this film's place in history stand? And I think that's a very interesting question to ask, because with a lot of movies like this, like it's a portrait of a very, or snapshot, I should say, of a very specific point in time, right? And sure, maybe this millennial generation is like seeping into what we are now, and it's like the identity is still forming. But like, how will this movie be viewed years from now? I think is an important question to ask. And I think the answer to that is just like, it will be viewed as what the time frame was and like kind of what we're experiencing. Like, people are doing this stuff just because that's what we do. That's who we are as people. Like, think of the relationship status. That was a huge thing for Mark in the movie, right? Think of, like this is what drives life in college. Are you having sex or not? Think of all the hacker talk, all the algorithms and the shit like that. Like, you couldn't make this movie about this stuff at any other point in time in history until now.
Well, because the shit didn't exist.
What?
Because the shit didn't exist.
Well, sure. However, I think it still shows that this point in time, like, was significant.
It captures a need.
Right.
There was a need. Right.
That was filled in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how the movie will be received later and farther on. Hopefully good, because it's a good movie.
Right.
But the time that we're talking about, maybe the time period, I think, is like
the birth of social media.
And we touched on it a couple of times, too, about like the way technology made all these things available to us. The computer now has reached that age, like 20 years later, to where now we can actually start. We got 3D printers. We have artificial intelligence. We have drones. We have things that are changing. Yeah. And I think it's even more important talking about, we used to wait for cabs. Now we have Uber. We used to go to bars and try to look at girls. Now we have Tinder. You know what I mean? Like, we used to go to the Blockbuster. Now we have Netflix. And we used to, you know, like, we used to have to go do things to make us feel important. Now we have Facebook. Bazing. But I'm just going to say.
Oh, shots fired, though. That ain't just a bazing. That's shots fired.
I was bazing the wrong one. Shots fired.
But
sorry.
It's not even like gun emoji.
Gun emoji. Now let me
he
just
held
do
it sideways.
I'm going to do some emojis right now to express myself. I think one thing, though, that is relevant is that we talked about to sum some of this stuff up. Mark Zuckerberg, we were talking about how, I said that I thought he was a little selfish, and Sean Parker in their way, this vindictive effort. And I think that's a key point to realize. I think a lot of what Facebook is indulging our selfish side, where now we're all able to, like you said, broadcast ourselves. And now we are the most important. And it vindicates that we have a page that can show us, that we can meticulously predict. Not even that, we have Snapchat, where I saw a bitch the other day walk, a girl, sorry. No, this girl's a bitch, though, dude. This chick was a bitch. I mean, this is a bottom feeder. This is a bottom. I call men bitch, too, for the way. Feminists, stay away.
Men can be bitches.
Yeah, men can this be person bitches. Was walking down the street with just wearing her clothes, and she pulls out her phone and starts filming a selfie of going, I'm walking down the street. Here's Martin Luther King Boulevard, blah, blah, blah.
That's terrible.
She sits and says,
that is painful.
But see, that is what, like, this is what Mark's creating this need.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's a plane going over there. Freaked the shit out of me. Mike's picked it up really weird. It fills that need of where, like, you know, just like Uber hacked the way, like, oh, I'm fucking tired of waiting for a cab. Oh, wait, we have Uber now. We don't have to wait anymore. Oh, I don't want to drive to fucking Blockbuster. Netflix, it's like, oh, man, I feel so unimportant. Oh, Facebook. You know what I mean? It's like this thing that kind of filled this very human need. It'll never fail. It's the most genius thing of all fucking time. Because really, that's the one thing that people can go on Facebook, keep refreshing it. Oh, let me get my profile pic.
Right.
It gives you that constant, you know, self-importance. It makes you feel important.
But
you know?
I think you even just focusing on Facebook is selling, like, even just this movie short, like, because this movie is not about Facebook,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Like, this movie goes so much more into that, like, if you think about, like, these, like, very selfish thoughts, these vindictive thoughts that you say they are, or, like, that we've been discussing, it's, like, in the end, it's just, like, human, like, feelings. Like, regardless of the technology we have at our disposal, like, what's driving them is human emotion and human drive. And
here's a distinction, though. Once you say, when the girlfriend breaks into the room and she goes, I saw your relationship study, he goes, I don't fucking know how to change it.
Right,
thing.
Yeah.
And there's a distinction between the type of person that needs a Facebook and the person that maybe, like, we've made these distinctions between Eduardo and Sean Parker and Eric Zuckerberg, there's a distinction we've already clearly established at this point. He doesn't know how to fucking use it. Because guess what? He probably doesn't fucking care about Facebook, man.
Yeah.
It's for the birds. I'm sorry. But I mean, like, there's a little bit of that of like, dude, like, I don't know fucking how. What are you, you know, what are you bitching about? And I think I'm not saying the movie necessarily suggested this. I'm just saying there is a different type of person that it catered to. And I think it's actually inherent in all of us. Like you said, this need to express ourselves or feel important. That's in all of us,
right,
to varying degrees. But I think what Facebook did is it kind of hacked that in the same way Uber, Netflix, Tinder, Venmo, all that shit does. You know what I mean? It makes our lives easier. It catered to that urge of wanting to feel important, wanting to do that. And some of us need it more than others. That's my thesis statement.
You do learn about people in a way you never could have before. And I think that's kind of interesting. To wrap it up, it is narcissism. And not that everyone is narcissistic or that everyone uses Facebook for narcissism. But you do certainly see a whole class of friends that you didn't quite realize had this starving need for attention.
Totally. No, and I just think, like, as Aaron Sorkin, like, put it well, it's like this movie could have been backdropped by anything. Like, Facebook just happened to be that moment in time, that, like, that time where he saw the story and was like, this is what I want to write about. Like, the things that endure in this story of, like, narcissism, of loneliness, of betrayal, of friendship, of companionship just in general, like, that permeates throughout any period of time. I just think now is, like, a very interesting time. And, like, when you have something like Facebook as a backdrop, it tells a really compelling story when maybe it's not a compelling idea in a lot of ways, as Dylan has been showing in his rebuttals. But
only time will tell.
Shots fired.
To each his own, as I would say. Yeah. And you're totally allowed to not have a Facebook.
Amen.
Well, so guys, that wraps up the long-anticipated Social Network podcast. As Dylan pointed out earlier, we may have talked a little fast. Mike and I agree. I think that's a little Aaron Sorkin kind of coming in
here.
We're
channeling him.
I think we're channeling our muse right there. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. This is cool.
Dude, it's been a lot of fun. Come join us again anytime soon.
Hell yeah.
Before we get into any plugs of ours, do you want to send in any plugs for you, man?
No, I don't have any plugs yet. We're going to work on a few
What's
projects.
Your Facebook, dude?
Oh, no. No, you're not going to find me, although I guess you would because I have my photo. But. no plugs yet, although we're gonna work on some shit. We'll have shit to share.
All right, and speaking of Facebook, as Dylan shits all over it, we actually have a Facebook for our podcast. Look for us, Made for Podcast Movies. You know our Twitter's there too. Our domain for our website is madeforpodcastmovies.com. You can find all that stuff there. You can reach out to us through there. And that's where the latest information on the next episodes will be, which, speaking of next episode, Dylan, take us away.
All right. So, yeah, we're going to do another one like we did with The Myth of Love, which I found really fun and we got some really good feedback on. It was when we mixed Annie Hall and Blue Valentine and kind of shat on love, but had a positive spin, you know?
Yeah.
This one is going to be called Failing at Art. Credit to the title to my friend Mike sitting right
You're
here.
You're welcome.
Thank
Failing
you,
at Art, it's going to be comparing Francis Ha, which was the, I don't know, year, like early 2010. 2013. Noah Baumbach. He's also, if you that name sounds familiar, it's from the guy who did Squid and the Whale, which Phil and I covered in an earlier podcast.
Yep.
And it's a good movie, shot black and white. It was a little tip of the hat to Woody Allen's Manhattan, little fun fact there.
Oh,
it's
nice.
About a girl named Frances Ha, who's a struggling ballerina navigating, contemporary New York City, Brooklyn, hipster scene. A lot of relevant stuff to us millennials in that I think is really cool. And then the other movie is Inside Llewyn Davis, Coen Brothers movie. Oscar Isaac plays the lead role.
Perfect.
Great movie. Another New York movie, but this time filmed in Greenwich Village in the 60s rather than Brooklyn.
During the folk scene.
2013s. During the height of the whole American folk explosion. He's also an artist struggling to make ends meet. They both deal with this very differently, and it's called The Failure of Art. We'll be tackling all of that. It's going to be very introspective. I'm going to call out all the stops. We'll have a big, well-produced, excellent episode. It'll be really good. I hope you guys enjoy it. Go see those movies. I think Francis Ha's on Netflix, Inside Llewyn Davis,
Not sure.
Pirate Bay.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
But, no, pay for it.
So, guys, so this little experiment of me hosting, I hope you like it. I had a lot of fun.
Send in your smileys.
Send in your smileys. Seriously, send in your feedback. If you want to hear more stuff like this, we'll cater to you. We love you guys. Thanks for listening. Till next time. Bye.